Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
I'm Chuck Bonneville. This is Julie Hayden, and this is the Chuck and Julie Show. Grassroots show, that is, true straight up.
Brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. Well, we start off today, obviously, a totally different show than we had planned to do, with the tragic news that Turning Point Actions, Charlie Kirk was assassinated. Basically, he was shot and killed while speaking at a student event at Utah Valley University. President Trump, I mean, there's been a lot of conflicting reports, but just a short time ago, President Trump put out this on Truth Social. The great and even legendary Charlie Kirk is dead. No one understood or had the heart of the youth in the United States of America better than Charlie. He was loved and admired by all, especially me, and now he is no longer with us. Melania and my sympathies go out to his beautiful wife, Erica, and family. Charlie, we love you. I'm sure people have seen, you know, the video has been circulating and you could see he was hit in the neck, and Chuck and I were talking about it. Obviously, it looked pretty bad right away, that you could see the video where they rushed him to the hospital. Initially, there were reports and there was video of the police taking a guy into custody. It was kind of ranting crazy stuff like, I have the right to remain silent and shoot me, things like that. Turns out, he is not the shooter. The university releasing information just a little while ago saying that at least right now, the suspect, the shooter, is still at large, although they have video of the person they believe to be the shooter leaving the university. I can tell you that kind of confusion. I mean, I've covered a lot of shootings like this, right? And it is not at all... I don't think you should read anything into the fact, because I've been seeing some stuff out there. Oh, they arrested the wrong guy. What's up with that? Is there a conspiracy? I don't think so. Sometimes if you have somebody behaving weirdly, behaving erratically, the cops take him into custody. And because there are so many cell phones and video around, people videotape it. And all of a sudden, the guy becomes a suspect. The police start questioning him. And they realize, no, he's not. And, you know, they have tons of video, apparently not particularly tight security. Charlie Kirk spoke all over the, in fact, he was scheduled to come speak in Denver just this weekend too, at a Truth and Liberty conference. That Laurel and West and Eimer, I've been texting back and forth to them. They knew Charlie Kirk. And they said they are just, devastated. They're obviously dealing with a lot and they may join us. But if you want to comment, feel free, as always, 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. And if you're on Zoom with us, feel free to go ahead and you can type your comments in or open up your mic if you want to talk about that as well. But it's just, you know, you see it and, you know, you think, okay, well, maybe, you know, we saw Trump, right? The miracle that was Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Got shot in the ear and it, you know, looked really bad at first, and then it turned out he was okay. So I think we all were hoping the same thing for Charlie Kirk, but he was just, you know, speaking at one of the many rallies he does for youth and conferences and things like that around the country. Everybody, all the good people in the country were praying for the best and hoping for the best. But again,
Charlie Kirk was a truly sui generis, which means unique person. And there are a few out there. Rush Limbaugh was a unique person. And once he left the airways, there's never been anybody like him, quite frankly. And when Charlie Kirk goes, he's an apostle to the godless colleges and universities, and is incredibly successful at that. And it was an enormous asset to all conservative causes, and a truly unique individual who was fearless, and that cost him his life. But at least he died the way he came in, which is fearless. And it's hard not to look at the left and kind of go, well, You really are something else.
Well, yeah, and obviously they don't have the suspect in custody. I don't know that they even have a suspect identified yet.
No,
Kash
but
Patel.
statements on
We'll
MSNBC.
play those in a second.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's a whole different thing. But just to sort of clarify what we know or don't know, Kash Patel said they're sending the FBI out there. So sometimes that helps. I think sometimes if you're local law enforcement, sometimes that doesn't help. So we don't know. We do know, again, in the initial confusion, they arrested a guy who was saying crazy stuff. Turned out, and now whether he was involved in some way, was he a
I really
decoy?
don't care.
I don't.
I don't care who the shooter is. I care about the death of Charlie Kirk.
Sure.
That's who really
What
I
I was
care.
going to say, though, is we don't, what I was going to say was obviously, since we don't know who the shooter is, we don't know what the motive is, but it does, you can surmise some certain things. One shot rang out, right? And it was a shot that university confirms from 200 yards away from another building, 200 yards away. So
Which
this was.
wasn't too far. I think Trump was 225 yards away from the shooter that grazed his ear and
Right.
killed the person in the back
So,
with a high-powered rifle. And I don't know what the weapon was here.
but obviously this is somebody who knew their way around weapons, right? And this is somebody, this is not
He
like an
shot.
accident, right? This wasn't somebody who got riled up in the moment of things. And this is somebody who brought a weapon specifically to this event, with the plan, obviously, of shooting Charlie Kirk, and in one shot. Yeah, we can play the left is
Hey,
truly
Chuck.
just, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to get in. So, Chuck, you kind of said what I felt. Like, obviously, Limbaugh's gone, and then there's nobody then will fill it. But I will have to say about Charlie Kirk, I liked him from the start. I think he was a really smart kid. And what was funny about when he showed up at the universities, 95% of the audience was booing him the whole time. Now, this was way back. And if you go back, if you start looking at his videos, like in the last, well, right before Trump was elected, there were more, like, I'm going to say like seven, the crowd was cheering him. And there'd be a few lefties that would show up that would sound stupid, like, oh, you can't debate me because I'm going to Harvard or I'm going to Oxford. And it's like, yeah, you can be debated pretty easy because they have no substance. But this is a huge loss. And I will have to say, I had to go to KOA and listen to Mandy Connell. I can't. Don't really, I had to get the news, and she said something that makes perfect sense. This is just red pilled these college students. If you think these elections are going to be easy, I think she's right. I think there were so many of these university kids that he had really won over, and he just won them over with common sense. It's real simple. Like, it's not that difficult. And when he says your money that you whatever spent on your college is probably the college of today, not when Chuck went to college, but the college of today, it's kind of turned into a joke. But I would say this to all you guys, if you're on the air and you're speaking your opinion, I mean, I think they probably thought they were in a safe crowd. I have no idea why there wouldn't have been. I don't know. Yeah, it's obvious that this was a political assassination. No ifs, ands, or buts. And you just, if you're in radio and you know what happened, it wasn't KNUS back then. What it was at KNUS with Berg. I think it's just going to be a lot more common. And the lefties are out there. They don't. It ain't the Trumpers that are killing anybody. I don't know. God rest his soul. What a great guy. What a loss for our cause.
Stephen, about I mean, honestly, he was about the only radio show that I could listen to and enjoy. I mean, everything
Agreed.
was
Agreed.
coddling, boring, and his was the one show that I really thought was, I'd listen to it and enjoy it.
He wasn't Limbaugh, but he came the closest to
No, but
me.
he had his own energy, he had his own,
But he was really likable, and he was relatable. Like, you could relate to him.
Well, he was bright, and that's it hadn't in common. I mean, I listened to, oh God, I can't tell you how many really, and Mandy Connell is certainly what I consider a fairly dumb individual.
Yeah, pain in the butt. Yep.
And there's so many others that are not all dumb, but they're just bland. They're boring. They
Yeah.
have nothing original to say. Charlie Kirk always had something original to say, just like Limbaugh did. You
Well,
couldn't tell ahead of time.
Kirk, I mean, he
Kirk
worked
never
hard.
yelled at anybody. He never yelled back like I would. I
Right,
mean,
right.
he never yelled at anybody. He was just real calm and
Well,
I don't know what.
he could have, and here's the thing, he could have taken the safe and the easy way. He had a radio show, right? He had an organization. He was making money there. But he realized that one of the ways you connect, particularly with young people, is you get out there and you meet them and you talk to them. And so he was willing, and he didn't just wasn't willing to do that. That he did that constantly, right? I mean, like you said, he was going to come to Denver this weekend. He was going to be in other places. And I think Mandy, I'll agree with her on that. I think he did red pill, but can this will red pill him even more, right? It's like he was all about free speech. And here is somebody who, like you said, it's a political assassination who, it wasn't enough to cancel him. It wasn't enough to limit his social media postings. No, they had to just take him out altogether. And I think they are sadly mistaken if they think that that's going to silence anything that
I
Charlie
guess,
said.
Trump has got a lot of, he's got a, he owes him a lot because I guarantee a part of this election was Charlie Kirk made a huge impact. And these kids, you can see it in them. They have changed over the years. When you first watched them, they were all booing him and you're an idiot. And then it turned out to where, yeah, there's only a few of them that are booing. Everybody liked him because he was honest and it just easy to like, easy to listen to. I'll listen to you guys' other comments on that,
All
but
right.
I'm
All right. Thanks for
really
coming.
sad day, sad day.
Yep, it is a sad day. Thanks, Barney. Anyone else wants to come on, feel free to go ahead and unmute yourself, or you can type your comment in. One of the things I wanted to touch on again is just.
Okay, let's choose.
No, I think it was Barney. One of the things I wanted to touch on is if you think you hated the liberal media enough, you did not. Their reaction to this, sort of like when, remember when Donald Trump was shot and they were immediately saying, oh, he wasn't really shot, or it was a fake bullet, or it wasn't this, it wasn't that, right? And so with Charlie Kirk, they immediately start like making like it's no big deal. And remember, we were talking about when they had the riots in LA and that those stupid reporters were saying things like, hey, oh, it's just.
Mostly peace.
It's mostly people, it's like people burning, barbecue, going to people like to
Riding
stand around,
cars.
riding cars on fire. Was like standing around at a barbecue or something like that. Here's what MSNBC tried to blame it on Charlie Kirk supporters. If we could please, Doug, play the MSNBC bite.
Yeah, and again, I emphasize what you just emphasized. We don't know any of the full details of this. We don't know if this was the supporter shooting their gun off in celebration, or so we have no idea, but.
What a ridiculous thing to say. The guy was shot in the neck from way behind the stage. This was not some person doing. And then it gets, hey, and Doug, if we could let Wes Eimer in too, we'll bring him up as soon as we get him. But in the meantime, too, then they get worse. Then they blame Charlie Kirk. If we could play the MSNBC soundbite number two, please.
What was just said, he's been one of the most divisive, especially divisive younger figures in this, who is constantly sort of pushing this sort of hate speech or sort of aimed at certain groups. And I always go back to hateful thoughts lead to hateful words, which then lead to hateful actions.
That's Matthew Dowd on MSNBC, and that despicable doesn't even begin to sum it up. Let me bring on Wes. Wes, I know I was texting with your mom. You guys are devastated. You knew Charlie Kirk pretty well. First, maybe let folks know how did you know him, and then just your thoughts on this.
I first met Charlie back at the Western Conservative Summit in 2017. Jeff Hunt introduced me because Jeff knew how active I was and how engaged. And Charlie and I hit it off. The week after the summit, I was reached out to personally by Charlie, and he put me in touch with the regional representative for Turning Point. And they were amazed by my story of going through the public school system and everything I'd been through working for President Trump. And Charlie wanted me to start a chapter for Turning Point. And I started one of the first chapters of Turning Point in the state. And it was the Jefferson County Activism Hub. It was designed for homeschoolers that had nowhere else to go to express their conservative views. But public schools, they have all these chapters. Well, homeschool, the nut hadn't been cracked. And Charlie asked me to head that up. And so I did. And I did it all the way through 2020. And I just got too busy and I stepped aside. But I've known Charlie since 2017. I have had still do his cell phone number. We talked regularly. He was invited to my high school grad party and was supposed to attend, but got pulled to Mar-a-Lago. He was a very dear friend. There was a time when I was invited to the chapter leadership summit, which was a very exclusive invitation. Only 50 chapter leaders from across the country could go at any time. And I was invited down to Phoenix for the chapter leadership summit. And I met privately with Charlie after the summit concluded, for about 2 hours.
Wow.
And, in my post that I put out on Facebook, I talk about this, but we sat and we spoke for nearly 2 hours about the future of the party, my role in what I could do, and how to crack the high school, the call, or the nut of homeschooling, because he had not yet figured out how to bring homeschoolers into Turning Point. And he was thrilled that I was doing it and asked how they could help. And one thing led to another, and we exchanged contact, and we stayed in touch ever since. Every time he was in Colorado, I would see him. I would go to see him. I was supposed to go see him next week when he was at CSU and CU doing his tour there.
What is it, Wes, about him that connected with kids, youth like you, and kids on college campuses?
You know, for me, it was that he was brave. He was brave enough to speak the truth. He was brave enough to come out and share what he truly believed we should be doing. He was talking about making things affordable so that we could have homes, starting families, living our lives for God, living our lives for what was good and true in the world. And he resonated with my generation like no one ever has. And at 31 years old, he accomplished more in his life than 90% of people ever will in the world. And he was an inspiration to not only me, but millions of children and teens and college students around the country. I've had the privilege of attending several Turning Point events over the years. And America Fest as a VIP guest, and Student Action Summit, you name it, I've been to them. And my heart breaks. When I heard the news, I called Tyler Boyer, who's the head of Turning Point Action. I called him immediately. And I was like, Tyler, please, for the love of God, tell me he's alive.
Yeah.
And I called Lauren Tonsich, the event director. I called everyone I could think of. And it was radio silence, which to me, I knew yeah. what had happened. And then I saw the video. And it was clear in that moment we'd lost him. And it's been a really hard day for me. And it's going to be a really hard day for a lot of people in this world that knew and loved Charlie, or knew of Charlie and loved him the same.
You know, whoever did this, I'm sure, wanted to silence him.
Yes.
I think because of the impact he had on people like you, so many of them, that the exact opposite is going to happen. Yes. That Charlie Kirk's message is not going to be silenced. In fact, it's going to be just the opposite.
Yeah. And, I'll echo what my former colleague, Brylan Hollihan, just said on Fox a short while ago. He was the chair of the Youth Advisory Council when I was on that. He said it best, I think. He said that Charlie would not, Charlie would have a way he would want us to remember this and to act from this. He wouldn't want us to act and devolve into chaos and anger and vitriol and hostility. He would want us to unite even stronger in our values and our ways, and unite to push the message forward. And he would want us to carry the torch for him and continue to do the work that he has been an expert at doing. And Charlie would want us to do that. And there are a lot of people that are questioning of what do we do now? They've got Charlie. They got Charlie, right? They got someone who did nothing but show grace to people that disagreed with him. They murdered him in broad daylight in Utah at a college. They murdered him. This was a heinous act of violence. And Charlie would not want us to drop everything and sit back and be quiet because of fear. He would want us to stand in the face of fear, look it in the eye, and power through and keep moving forward, keep marching down the field with our flags and our patriotism and our God, and marching to that end zone so that we can retake this country once and for all. That's what Charlie would have wanted. And it is incumbent on all of us, young, old, to do just that.
No, I agree. And I think, the heinous comments from some of the other media people, the left always like somehow, I won't even go into it. They were just so outrageous. And I think you're right. It's like, don't get distracted by that, right? Don't get distracted by that. Get stay, like you said, Charlie Kirk would want everybody to stay on message and to keep repeating the message. And it resonated, and it will only continue to resonate,
Do
I
you see
think.
anybody at Turning Point who could pick up the torch?
I think his wife, I think Erica will, once she has had time, I think Erica will step forward and really take that burden over. Tyler Boyer, he's the head of Turning Point Action. He's been Charlie's right hand from day one. I think Tyler will also have that ability, but I think that it's going to fall to Erica to carry his torch forward. Because she, like all of us, would know that that is what Charlie would have wanted. And on top of that, I mean, Charlie would not want us to grieve. He would want us to rejoice that he's with our Lord and Savior. He is in heaven. He is with his Creator. He knew, Jason Chaffetz said it, he knew where he was going when things were over. And Charlie would not want us to grieve for that. He would want us to rejoice that he is in heaven and he's in a better place. He is in a place with none of this senseless violence. He is in a place where there is no hatred, where there is nothing but love. And Charlie would want us to be happy for that. And it's very hard in this moment when we have all lost a friend who moved mountains, who took chances on kids that didn't deserve it. Like me and Brylin Hollihan and thousands like us that he took chances on and lifted up and put to the forefront so that we could grow. It's so very hard to think that way, but we have to remember that and we have to be steadfast in that moving forward.
Wes, let me just ask you, because we have a guest coming on at 3:30. Just any other thoughts or anything else you would want to leave us with?
I think I've covered it, but I would ask that if you are grieving like we are and you don't know where else to turn, that you turn to God. He is the only one that can bring you peace in this time. My mom and I, we've opened the doors of our church and we're hosting a prayer vigil for Erica and the Kirk family, and Charlie and everyone affected by this tragic senseless act of violence. So if you'd like to join us, I'll post it in the comment on Facebook so you can see it. And I believe, Julie, you probably already have it since you mentioned you were talking to mom. But please join us at 2000 Quail Drive in Lakewood. The doors are open. Come as you are and be with people that are feeling the same hurt you are because you're not alone.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much, Ruth.
Thank you, Wes.
Appreciate you
And
coming on.
appreciate you. And we're so sorry for you and everybody
Thank
who
you.
knew him. All right. Thank you. Weston Eimer there. He said it right. It's like, don't get caught up in grieving. Be joyful that Charlie is in heaven and carry on. Right. And so, we had a guest previously scheduled. We backed up. So Doug, if you want to go ahead and call her, although to a certain extent,
Maybe rescheduling.
No, she can come in because it kind of
Okay.
ties in. It kind of ties in because I think there has been. So Doug, just let me know when you get here. There has been. I mean, this is just the most horrific example, but there have been violent. We had the people in Charlotte, right? The guy that stabbed the girl in Charlotte who had been arrested out. I mean, we don't know what we're going to find out what happened with this shooter. But would it actually surprise anybody if we realized, one, that he was on somebody's radar and they ignored it, or two, that the guy had been had the girl had mental health issues? No. Would that shock anybody? No. And we have here in Colorado, wanted to talk about this. Steve Reams, the sheriff from Weld County, who we would agree with on some things, disagree with on other things. But he was posting that he had to release a violent criminal because he'd been ruled incompetent to stand trial. And under a new law passed in Colorado in 2024, signed by Governor Polis, if somebody has been that they commit the crime. So the question isn't guilt or not guilt, right? The question is they're not competent to stand trial. So then they have to let them go, right? And so
Well, they can keep them but if they can't be,
they can't get them into the state hospital for mental
or they
health.
can't, don't think he can be provided enough mental health to become competent in 5 years, then they let him go.
They let
So
him go.
if he's
Let him
really
go.
crazy, they let him go.
Right.
I mean, it's just only the Democratic legislature in Poland could come up with something
Though
that
there's a
stupid.
ton of Republicans who voted for the bill
Well,
too,
of
and
course there are. Barbara Kirkmeyer.
is one of
She,
them.
yeah.
But I wanted to talk about this. So our guest is here, and it kind of ties in Michelle Steeb. She's a visiting fellow with Discovery Institute's Fix Homelessness Initiative. She's the author of Answers Behind the Red Door, Battling the Homeless Epidemic. Hey, Michelle, thank you. Welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show.
I'm so glad to be here, and I just want to thank you both for bringing this issue to the forefront. It is a very important one, and Colorado is a model not to follow.
Yeah. Well, let me ask, I mean, given that the Charlie Kirk assassination today, we don't know who the suspect is yet, but I was saying, would it surprise anyone to determine, like I was saying, that this might have been somebody who had cropped up on somebody's radar screen or somebody that had, you know, had mental health issues? And again, we don't know, but I think, Michelle, certainly we wouldn't be surprised because we've seen it before, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we saw with the Irina, you know, case a couple days ago, the horrific example of what happens when we ignore and don't treat mental illness. When mental illness and addiction, which often accompany homelessness, which is why we're on the on this, you know, in this discussion today, those are diseases of the brain. They accompany homelessness with about 80% of the population. When diseases, any disease, right, cancer, heart disease, when those issues go untreated, they get worse. And we should not be surprised as a country that when we rolled out a policy in 2013 for homelessness, which said, we're not going to fund those issues anymore. We're not going to require them anymore. What we're going to do for everyone who's homeless is just give them keys to a house. We should not be surprised that people are getting sicker and that homelessness has risen drastically. When they rolled out this policy in 2013, the Obama administration, they promised it would end homelessness in a decade. And we are now at the highest point in our country's history ever recorded, 35% increase since this policy has been in place.
Well, in Colorado, it's even worse because I know now senator, but then mayor and then governor John Hickenlooper, we're going back decades now, is going to end homelessness in 10 years. I don't know why they picked 10 years. Well, and talk to me. I
Heard
mean, to
that
me,
in Philadelphia, it's just,
yeah, it's
we do it all around. But it's and the mayor slash governor slash senator said, well, that was just hyperbole. We weren't really going to end homelessness. And you go, well, you could have closed the time before we spent the millions upon millions that you conned out of everybody. But I think, you know, the mental illness and the homelessness and addiction is a form of mental illness really go together. And the idea that we have people in Colorado, we have one that the Weld County Sheriff had to let go who's a schizophrenic, and he was going around stomping on people. But he was too incompetent to stand trial. So too incompetent to stand trial, he had to be released until he stomps on somebody else, and maybe he'll eventually.
Well, then you won't. Then you'll have to release him again, right? Because he can't stand trial.
Murder somebody, at least by the logic of the statute. Maybe once it'd be, you know, they figure out some way, maybe. But it's I don't know. How does the left come up with these great solutions so often? Of you know, no reduced harm centers
and stuff. Yeah,
reduced harm centers. Let's get homes for all these people who suffer severe illness, mental illnesses, because that's what they really need is a nice home. No, they don't need treatment. No. They. I mean, it's just. I don't know. There's something incredible about the mindset of the left these days.
Well, and that's why I wrote my book, quite frankly, which, you know, in back in, you know, 2019 through 20, I was hearing from, you know, all walks of people, you know, left, right, you know, black, Caucasian, gay, straight, female, male, old, young, didn't matter. They were saying, why has this issue gotten so bad? And again, that was back in 1920. And it was way worse, but it wasn't nearly as bad as it is today. And that's why I wrote the book. I wrote the book to explain that, but also to give people hope and a roadmap through that hope to turning it around. I will say, even despite all the issues we've seen in the last couple of weeks, and I am so grateful to this president for issuing the executive order that he did, which reorients funding, homelessness funding. By the way, the federal government is the largest funder of homelessness. And they distribute most of that funding through the local level. And so what the president's executive order does is say, we need to redirect funding to prioritize mental illness and addiction treatment. We need to also, you know, focus on employment training and focus on clearing encampments, because those are very unsafe, unhealthy environments for those struggling with homelessness, but also for the general public, because again, you know, the lack of treatment of these diseases that are exacerbated by, you know, the trauma of living on the streets and trying to self-medicate, they're getting worse. So it's an unsafe environment for everyone, and this executive order points the ship in the right direction, but we've got a lot of work to build a system that used to just be focused on giving people keys. The new system needs to be focused on how we help them recover and achieve restoration.
Well, and it's this whole concept of compassion as opposed to accountability, right? I mean, you have,
right.
I think that homeless, there are so many populations and variables. There are some people who have just severe mental health problems, and they need help. There are some people who run into financial straits and they need help. But there are other people who are just drug addicts and they live on the streets. I mean, then what they even call themselves?
They
need
help.
They're not homeless. They're unhoused. I mean, it's a choice they make, right? And I mean, when I was a reporter, I did interviews with them. They all had places to go if they wanted to, but they just wanted to be high all day. And so when you have the Democrats and their policy is compassion, and I submit to you that they're not being compassionate. They just want to create chaos. The Democrats do, and they're happy when we have this chaos. They don't. Governor Polis, after he was like, "Oh, this is unacceptable that the sheriff in Colorado had to release this schizophrenic guy because he couldn't get mental health treatment." He's the one who signed the bill, right? It's like, and I just think there is something twisted, and they're not compassionate at all. There's nothing compassionate about watching somebody shoot up in front of your, you know, your elementary school, and then have the person overdose. I mean, there's no compassion for anybody there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The death rate amongst the homeless population is up 77%, and that is a conservative estimate. There is nothing compassionate about this approach. It's a massively failed. It was an experiment to begin with. They took an approach that was designed to help 10 to 20% of the homeless population. And it was the Obama administration in 2013 that rolled it out as a one size fits all approach. And it absolutely has been the opposite of compassion. And what's crazy to me is you still have, I'm not like major foundations, major associations that, you know, claim they are homelessness advocates who are sticking to this despite the failure that is very clear in data and very clear, you know, with our own eyes, right? We're seeing what's happened on our streets, and they're sticking to it. Gavin Newsom is one of the worst, right? California is the only state in the nation that went all in on the federal policy. They tied all of their state dollars, you know, $24 billion in the last 5 years to Housing First as well. And they now have a 40% increase in their homeless population. They're the epicenter of the crisis. So they're sticking to it, and no one's holding them accountable, which is crazy.
Well, and in Denver, it's the same thing. Like I said, so the legislature passes this law that Republicans, tragically, many of them signed on to.
Uh, uh, Rhino wing of the Republican
The
Party.
Rhino wing of the Republican Party,
Yes.
that again, that said, if you are determined to be incompetent to stand trial, which means you're, if you're mentally ill, they can only hold you, I think it's for like 90 days or something like that. And then if they can't get you into some kind of mental health treatment, which of course they can't, then they have to just release you. Now, does the legislature turn around and Governor Polis, who signed that bill, do they say, oh, well, maybe we need to, you know, get more funding for the state mental health hospital. Maybe we need to get some more, like you said, treatment programs. And because there with the legal system, they could force isn't the right word, but they put the person in treatment, right? And so you can try to get them help. But we don't do that, right? We just throw money. And I submit to you that the whole homeless thing, there's this cottage industry. There are a ton of people making an awful lot of money on the homeless issue, and they don't want to give any of it up. If they cured, if they spent half, I mean, if they actually spent their money, they would put themselves out of jobs, and they just don't want to do that, I think.
Yeah. Well, it certainly appears that way. Again, most of those people are fighting the federal government, the, you know, the EO that I just mentioned,
right.
President Trump's EO. There's already local governments who have watched the disaster on their streets suing the federal government because they want to use their money, right? I mean, people can, the federal government, just like a local government, can use their own money, the way that they want to do it, just like you and I can. And there are local governments and organizations already in the process of suing the Trump administration because they want to change the failed approach. It's craziness.
So what is, you said you talked about, you know, in your book, and we'll let you at the end talk to folks about how to get your book, but what are some of the ways forward that you see, some of the things Trump is doing?
Yeah. So again, he kind of pointed the ship, the battleship, in the right direction, right, with these EOs. And now the federal government needs to reorient all of its funding to treatment and recovery, you know, programs to help the homeless, you know, recover and be restored and actually be able to afford their own housing, not to be given keys to lifelong housing supported by us, the taxpayers. So that there's a lot of work ahead, but what we can do right now as a local government, a local community, number one, do not tie all of your dollars to housing first. It's a failed, a one size fits all approach, it's failed. So do not use, like, you know, let's say Denver, do not tie all of your funding to this approach. You need multiple approaches that include treatment and recovery, and that maybe include housing first for a small segment, though again, it's just so massively failed as a one-size-fits-all approach, right? Number two, you need to make sure that the homeless, those struggling with homelessness, have pathways to treatment and recovery. I think what's going to happen is, so the federal government has a fiscal year of October through September, right? Because of the EO, there's going to be a new funding request or funding proposal out to local governments, because again, the federal government spends most of its money through the local level. And they're going to say, come back to us and tell us how you're going to do programs that, you know, treat and help people recover. There's a lot of local governments and some COCs, I'm not going to go into what that is, who are literally saying they're going to write a response to that proposal and say that they're going to do that, but they're going to try and keep doing the same thing.
Right.
And I think, you know, as community citizens, we need to start to hold leaders accountable to something that is much more effective and allowing them to continue to, you know, support these policies and implement these policies is, you know, it's up to us. If we don't, you know, politicians want to keep their job, right? That is, you know, for many of them, it's the best paying job they've ever had, the best power gig they've ever had. If you threaten their job, they're going to, you know, stand up and pay attention. But right now, they get away. You know, Gavin Newsom, I just wrote a piece about this, you know, about 3 weeks ago. Four and a half years ago, he literally said, I'm ending family homelessness in 5 years. And the numbers are up over 38%. And no one remembers that, right? Or at least if they do remember, they're not talking about it. So I wrote an op-ed about it. And I said, who's going to hold him accountable? I used to live there, so I care a lot about that state. But, you know, we have to hold them accountable and fire them if they're not doing, if they're not being effective.
Well, let me, Michelle, because we have to let you go here. You make some great points. And so your book, Answers Behind the Red Door, Battling the Homeless Epidemic, where can people get it and where can people read some of your stuff?
Sure. Amazon is where they can find the book. And thank you for asking the question. And then my website, michellesieb.com. It's MICHELE. S is in Sam, T is in Tom, double E, B is in boy, .com. I write a lot on this topic, and there's some research there as well, but would look forward to hearing from any of your readers who, or your listeners rather, who have further questions.
All right.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it, and best of luck.
Yeah, keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you. Look forward to continuing our discussion.
Exactly. Thank you, Michelle. Here's some. And Jacob, thank you. Jacob had posted, you know, Trump's order on homelessness is more humane than failed liberal policies. And then he points out, plus, President Trump gets a lot of drugs off the streets by blowing up boats of drugs. That's another way.
Well, Trump said, OK, we're going to get rid of the street problem. You got three choices. One, you can go to drug rehab or mental health rehab, or you can go to jail. And that's your three choices.
Yeah.
And they're all gone. I mean, it's so simple. It's pathetically simple, right? I mean, we've been stuck with it for 50 years after lots of federal district courts saying, you know, you can't be mean to the homeless and stuff.
You go back again, going back, you know, to the Charlie Kirk assassination, the attack. And the woman who was, you know, just riding why would anyone ride public transit anymore? I don't know. You know, in Charlotte, all of these things, and Steve Reams having to release people. And then there was the guy in Arapahoe County that they had to drop the charges. And I was reading again today, just another one. A lot of these people have mental health issues. And if you're a defense lawyer, that's a get out of jail free card anymore, right? All you do is you just say, hey, my client's incompetent. Right. Well, they don't have time to have competency hearings. They can't do all of that in the time that the new law, the stupidest law, not the stupidest, but one of the stupidest ever passed. So they can't do all of this in time. Right. So then they have to let him go. And again, your friend, our rhino queen, Barb Kirkmeyer, who is running for governor of Colorado, and all of the other Republicans in the Senate in Colorado voted for this bill. Right. So don't tell us about, oh, we need to work on crime and things like that. Colorado's a fourth dangerous, most dangerous state. Well, how did it get that way? Well, people like Barb Kirkmeyer want to continue these same failed policies. I will point out Scott Bottoms, who's the grassroots guy running for governor, he voted against it.
Yeah.
Along with Brandi Bradley, Ken DeGraff. You know, thank God for people like that trying
to those.
Standing up for it. But, what could go wrong with letting dangerous schizophrenic criminals out on the street? What could go wrong with that, right? It's like, again, if they arrest them, they're just going to have to let them go again. It's like, and then Jared Pohl is so hypocritically tweeting, oh, this is unacceptable.
It's
like, what did you sign the bill for, you know? So from Jacob, you know, the problem with the Charlotte murder is that a knife was used and not a gun. And it's, if you want to bring a knife, you bring a gun. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing, it's been a bad week. It's been a sad week. But I think, you know, what we're seeing is the Democrat policies in these big cities. I mean, it's not happening in some of the cities in Florida, right? Yeah, it's not happening in Republican run cities. The reaches, I think, a tipping point sometimes. And I wonder if we've kind of got there where we have released now and releasing in Colorado enough of these people and some of these other very progressive cities where they're just releasing these people and these dangerous things are happening. And then people wonder, you know, the people wonder.
Well, luckily
why.
We'll have somebody like Mondani.
Yeah.
In New York.
Who wants to defend the police.
Wants to defend, defund the police. Yeah.
Right.
And Barb Kirkmeyer, she's a Mondani. on the Republican end of things. It's just well, it's just the way it is. You can't get too down.
No, and so I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up. I think and I think if you joined us late, and if you want to listen again, we talked about the whole tragedy involving Charlie Kirk at the beginning, and thank you to Weston Eimer
Yeah, that's good coming
for
on.
coming on and talking about it, and President Trump too. So we will obviously there'll be a lot more to talk about on that. As we announced the other day, we're off on Fridays now, but we'll be back on Monday,
Monday
and
and Wednesdays we're here. We've surrendered the other hour, and we hope somebody will pick it up. And Darcy had it for a while, and I'm not sure whether she's going to
I don't think so.
continue to do it or she's not. But
No. But anyway, we are here on Mondays.
we're here.
We're on Mondays and Wednesdays. And on that, and again, it's a sad day. But thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody on Zoom. Thank you to the great guys at BBS and all of our listeners. And we will see you on Monday.
Take care, everyone.
All right. Thanks.